Hello, everyone. Welcome to Healthcare and Its Future on Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm your host, Dave Custy, and my guest today is Mark Roeder, Chapter President of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. Mark joined the National MS Society Maryland Chapter in January 2004 as Vice President of Development and Marketing. 2 years later, he was promoted to Executive Vice President of Mission Advancement, and in April 2008, Mark was named to his current position of Chapter President. As such, he is responsible for a chapter that serves 7,000 people living with MS in 17 Maryland counties and Baltimore City. The chapter has an annual operating budget of $3.5 million, a professional staff of 16, and a 22-member board of trustees. Mark is also a member of the Society's East Region Management Team, which develops goals, strategies, and operating plans for implementation across 10 chapters, serving 80,000 people with MS and with a combined operating budget of $40 million. Prior to joining the Society, Mark held a number of senior-level marketing and management positions in the retail industry. From 2001 through 2003, he served as the Director of Marketing for Giant Food Stores, based in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And from 1997 until 2001, he was the Marketing and Promotions Manager for Giant Food Incorporated, the dominant retail food chain in the Baltimore-Washington market. For much of the 1990s, Mark supervised the Public Affairs Department for Giant, a position which enabled him to gain an understanding and appreciation for both the legislative process and the work of charitable organizations throughout the Mid-Atlantic. During his corporate career, he served on the board of directors for various nonprofit organizations. Mark resides in Westminster with his wife and three children, and in his spare time enjoys reading, cycling, playing piano, and coaching youth basketball. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio, Mark.
Thank you very much, David. Glad to join you today.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us a little short bio.
Sure. Well, I think that you just described it very well, but I would say I've had two careers up to this point. The first, my first career was really in corporate marketing, and was very fortunate, as you mentioned, to be able to work with many outstanding nonprofit organizations while I was at Giant Food. Giant is a company that I think most folks know is very community involved and very community oriented, and that enabled me in my position to be able to reach out and just meet many wonderful organizations and many terrific caring people who are providing important services for people in the community. Then what happened over time, I actually became very involved with the National MS Society while still working at Giant, and decided to change careers and actually make nonprofit work my career. And I've been now with the National MS Society for 10 years, and it's been a terrific experience. We've been able to, I think, have a very serious and real impact on trying to help people with MS address their daily challenges, and with moving treatments and new therapies forward. So it's been very rewarding.
Tell me, how did you get involved with multiple sclerosis? How did that come about?
Sure. Well, my first involvement came when I was very young. I have a cousin who is a good bit older than myself, who was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And so I was able to see somewhat the impact and the effects of MS at a very early age. I actually participated in the very first Walk MS event that occurred right here in Towson, Maryland, in 1989. Back then, we called the event was called the Super Cities Walk for MS. So a very different name than what we use now. But I was just starting my career at Giant Food, and it was a new event. And they contacted our office and, you know, really were looking for guiders and pointers on how to try to get this new nonprofit event off the ground. And we came on board as one of the first sponsors. And I was fortunate to be able to participate in that first event. And then what happened many, many years later, when I was working for Giant Food based up in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, one of our senior team members became very involved with the Walk MS campaign up in that area. He had a very close personal connection to MS. And he and I were chatting, and I had mentioned that previously I had been involved in. One thing led to another, and before you know it, we're both starting to put together this walk team. And we had great support throughout the organization. We're actually able to put together the largest walk team in the country at Giant for several years. And that got me really to work closely with the organization as a volunteer leader, and gave me an opportunity to just see what was happening within the National MS Society. And I liked what I saw. I saw an organization that was progressive and was committed to really changing lives for people with MS. And very soon there became an opening at a senior level in the Maryland chapter. And one thing led to another, and that's how I wound up working as a professional staff leader.
Tell us the basics about multiple sclerosis itself.
Sure. So multiple sclerosis is, I guess the easiest definition is it's a disease of the central nervous system, where the information between the brain and the body gets interrupted. And much of the research that we fund is to try to understand, you know, why that interruption occurs. One of the ways when I visually try to explain to people what MS is, often I'll use the example of an electric cord. And so if you think about an electric cord, you have your live wire that runs through the middle of it, and then you have insulation that surrounds that wire that protects the wire and obviously protects the individual who's holding it. And the nervous system is somewhat the same. You have your nerve cells that are surrounded by a fatty substance that's called myelin. And if you think about an electric cord and what happens if somehow accidentally the insulation gets snipped, you know, say you're cutting grass or something, or you're using your electric trimmer and accidentally the trimmer hits the electric cord and it snips into that insulation and potentially even snips into the wire itself, well, then the current does not flow through. And that's what happens in MS, is that, you know, the brain is sending the signal to another part of the body, but for some reason that signal's not making it through because the insulation, the myelin, has become damaged, and sometimes the nerve cell itself has become damaged. Really, what we are trying to do at the MS Society is better understand why that occurs, understand how the progressions occur and why progressions occur over time, and then try to develop better treatments and therapies to help people live their best lives every day with MS.
You've been there now for 10 years. Happy anniversary in January, right?
Thank you. Yes.
So tell me a little bit about your work there in the last 10 years, how it's progressed, and then rounded out by how multiple sclerosis and the treatment thereof has changed, improved in those 10 years.
Well, I think in terms of the work itself, what has changed quite a bit is the organizational capacity at the National MS Society and the way that we're structured. When I started 10 years ago, we had over 100 chapters across the country. And you know, today we have 40 chapters, and we're organized now, obviously still on the chapter level. We have larger chapters covering more territory, but then we're also organized regionally so that we can be as efficient as we possibly can with the donations that are provided. You know, one of the things that we do now in the organization is we share staff between chapters in certain situations. Such as, for example, my vice president of finance is also a vice president of finance for another chapter in Virginia, and we look for those opportunities to share positions and share best practices, so that we can again be as efficient as we possibly can with the dollars that are entrusted to us. So the organization has changed quite a bit, and of course, technology has brought about the changes in the organization as well. You know, the way that obviously you and I are able to communicate today is very different from perhaps 10 years ago. Within the organization, the technology is now very different, both in terms of the way that our chapters are able to communicate with each other, but also the way that we can communicate with our constituents. And so, you know, I can remember 10 years ago when I joined, and we would start the Walk MS recruitment campaign every year. We would basically be on the phone, and we would mail out thousands and thousands of letters to people who had participated in Walk the prior year. You know, now we still are on the phone. We're still doing a lot of those phone calls. But now with Facebook and obviously email and whatnot, just the way that we go about trying to recruit people and cultivate people has changed. And so, you know, I think that clearly we've seen much progress along those lines. The other big change that's come about within our organization is the way that we utilize and really rely on volunteers has expanded significantly. And again, it's as we as an organization have reduced the number of chapters and have fewer professional staff members, what it means is that those volunteers, those individuals who provide, you know, not just the volunteer who helps us out on walk day with registration and rest stops or something like that, but also now on a day-to-day basis, volunteers who help out with, you know, many of our office activities and our key leadership volunteers, that we just really rely on them more so than ever before. When I joined the chapter, we had a professional staff well over 30. And now we are at a professional staff about half that size. We had a board of trustees that had 10 people, and now that's more than doubled. So you can see how the pendulum has really swung toward that volunteer leadership. And then, obviously, on the research side of the organization, you know, we are really at a time where it's the potential for new therapies, the potential for new treatments and better understanding is greater than it's ever been before. When I joined the organization, there were only a couple of disease-modifying therapies. And even prior to then, the first disease-modifying therapy for MS didn't even come to market until the early 1990s. So it's relatively new. Now what we've seen is over the last few years, very much rapid advancement in the therapies to where we now have 10 disease-modifying therapies for MS that are approved and on the market. And those therapies are very different, whereas previously it was therapies were all injectables. Now we have the option of some oral medications for individuals. We also have the option of a monthly infusion for people with certain types of MS. So we're seeing, you know, the options just really expand in the treatments. The other with the research where it's changed quite a bit is exactly what do we consider research and what is it that we're looking at? You know, when you look at lifestyle now and you look at diet and you look at smoking and you look at salt intake and you look at vitamin D and the role that that can have in MS, all of those are relatively recent discoveries. And what we're now very much exploring and understanding in a better way is that lifestyle can really have an impact on MS episodes and the progression of those MS episodes and the frequency with which they occur. So again, I think that the biggest change is really in organizationally, we are focusing more and more efforts on research and the understanding of the disease and the potential for new treatments and new therapies is greater than it's ever been.
So in the last 10 years, just to kind of sum up, your organizational skills are really extended and now you have a lot of more people and a lot more money in terms of being able to address the problem of multiple sclerosis, and treatments are a lot better, but there still is really not a known cause for it, is there?
That's correct. There still is no known cause. Understanding of the disease is increasing. There is a lot of work in trying to understand the relationship between a genetic predisposition for an individual and then perhaps, you know, an environmental trigger. So again, many of those environmental triggers that we're taking a look at include things such as smoking, such as sunlight exposure and vitamin D. What has been very much studied and recognized is the fact that the prevalency rate for MS is greater in your northern hemisphere. So the farther you get away from the equator, your prevalency for MS increases. And so that's led to a lot of research with regard to sunlight and vitamin D. So again, the cause of MS is still not known. We're getting closer all the time to understanding how the various factors potentially combine for an MS diagnosis. And obviously there's still a great deal to learn, and that's why the research continues.
But it is a lot more hopeful than 10 years ago.
It's absolutely much more hopeful, and the therapies that are now on the market, they're more numerous. We have different options in terms of how those therapies are administered. One of the things that we're most proud of at the MS Society is the role that we play in helping to bring the brightest minds into the field of MS research. So throughout our history, we have recruited more than 800 scientists to the field of MS study, through fellowships and whatnot. And so I think that's, one of the things that's most exciting is when you look at the individuals who are studying MS and trying to get a handle on exactly what's going on with this disease, and really trying to, as we refer to it at the MS Society, trying to stop, restore, and end. That's sort of the three pillars of MS research. You know, we're trying to stop it in its tracks. We're trying to restore function that's been lost, through myelin repair, through nervous system repair. And then we're trying to end it forever. Do away with MS so that nobody ever has to hear that diagnosis again. And when I look, even just here in Maryland, at the individuals at the Maryland Center for MS and at the Johns Hopkins MS Center, I look at those individuals that are really involved in the field of MS study. And, I'm convinced that we are, we're going to get there. We're going to find that cure. We're going to figure out exactly what causes this disease and move forward.
Well, you just kind of touched on my next question. Of the 10 top institutions for multiple sclerosis research, Baltimore has two of them, which you just said, the Maryland Center for Multiple Sclerosis and Johns Hopkins. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with them and the research centers around.
Sure. We have relationships with the two centers on multiple levels. Both of the directors of the two centers in Baltimore are on our board of trustees, and we have very much a free-flowing conversation back and forth as to, what are the needs of people with MS? What, from a research perspective, do we need to focus on? The way that our organization works is that the dollars that are raised at all of our events, such as Walk MS and Bike MS and our various galas and whatnot, a certain percentage of all those dollars automatically gets directed to our national research fund. And through what's called a peer review process, which is basically where, again, the top scientists, the top volunteer scientists across the country come together twice a year, and they take a look at all the various proposals that the MS Society has received for research funding, and they rank those proposals and then distribute the dollars that we have available until we run out of dollars. And I'm very pleased to say that the two centers here in Baltimore are receiving significant funding right now from the National MS Society for a variety of research studies that are taking place at both facilities. So they're very involved with us on the research level. We also have a partnership on the clinical side to make sure that jointly we're helping people with MS address their daily challenges. So the National MS Society helps to fund physical therapists and nurses at the two MS centers here in Baltimore. And then the MS centers they also are very active with helping to spread the word about the MS Society. You know, when somebody is diagnosed, when that diagnosis for MS is confirmed, one of the first steps that occurs at the MS centers is that, you know, the patient is encouraged to contact the National MS Society and reach out to us to see what programs, what information, what resources we have available. It's very much a strong partnership that exists between the MS Society and the Johns Hopkins MS Center and the University of Maryland Center for MS.
Very good. How do you see your work progress, say, like 3 months to even 5 years down the road?
Well, the 5 years one is perhaps easier, because I always say that I hope 5 years from now I'm not doing this anymore, because we've found a cure. You know, that's our goal. Our goal in the organization is to basically put ourselves out of business. You know, we want to make sure that we're doing everything possible to move toward, again, understanding this disease, figuring out exactly what causes it, and then curing it forever. So, you know, that would be the goal, whatever that time frame is. That would be the goal, is that basically there doesn't need to be a National MS Society, because, you know, we've eradicated MS. You know, 3 months from now, I see our organization continuing to try to be as efficient and as effective as we can with the dollars that our generous donors give to us. And so we're actually in conversations with many folks at our national staff and with our nearby chapters about additional opportunities to be efficient with our structure, efficient with how we market, and really trying to grow our net revenue to be able to put into MS research.
Let me ask you about what is lacking. What do you see is lacking right now that you really want to work on in terms of the society, in terms of treatment, whatever you think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, we can always use more. We can always use more funding. The reality is that MS research is very expensive. You know, so I mentioned before our peer review process, and unfortunately, there are always many more great projects to be funded than what our available funding can permit. So obviously, additional funding, you know, would move us forward in our mission. And that's why we continue to hold events like Walk MS and Bike MS and encourage as many people as possible to come out and participate and really be part of the solution of trying to move MS research forward. When you talk about what is also lacking, you know, not that it's lacking, but we can always use more volunteers, you know, more folks that can help us spread awareness. You know, multiple sclerosis, we sound like some other diseases. There's still much confusion in the marketplace as to exactly what MS is versus other diseases. And so the more people that we can have get involved at a grassroots level, working with us to help spread awareness, to help, you know, something as simple as a friendly visitor, if you will, to people with MS, that would be tremendous. So, we always have room for more people who want to get involved with the MS movement.
Well, let me suggest this. I'm an internet radio station. It features Baltimore to people worldwide. I consider this just an introductory interview, and I'd like to continue it. I'd like to have it be an ongoing feature on the radio station, and that we can see. I'm recording everything now. Eventually, I'll go to live and record it, and within the live framework is the ability to have live forums with people worldwide. So what I'd like to do is to continue this in terms of more interviews, but also in terms of forums that we could talk to like-minded people worldwide who are doing research and who have their own ideas, and we progress that way. Plus, it keeps it featured continuously. What do you think about that?
I think that sounds terrific, and we would love to partner with you on that initiative, David, and we can certainly provide many interesting individuals for you to interview, be they healthcare professionals, be they people with MS who have tremendous stories to tell, fundraisers who are doing wonderful things. We would love to keep the conversation going.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest problems in the field that you're in, and many like it, is to keep it featured, prevent it from being a one-off or a two-off or an annual event or something like that, because it's people have multiple sclerosis all the time, 24/7, so let's keep it going 24/7.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think the final thing at this point would be if I can put in a plug for our Walk MS campaign.
Sure.
We have we're in the midst of our campaign right now. Here in Maryland, we do 11 walk sites. We're in 11 different communities. 6 of those walks have been held, but we still have 4 more walks to go, including this weekend. We will be in Baltimore City, Westminster, Columbia, and Hagerstown. And then on Mother's Day weekend, the Saturday before Mother's Day, we'll be finishing up with our big event in Ocean City. So we would love to. And Walk MS is not only the Maryland chapter's number one fundraising event. It's actually what it's our largest community event for people with MS. It's the largest gathering of people with MS that we do every year. And so it's a terrific opportunity for thousands of people with MS to come together with thousands of people who certainly care about doing something about MS through increased fundraising. And I would encourage folks to consider going to our website, which is walkmsmaryland.org, and get more information about our upcoming events, and then come out and join us at one of the sites. I think that it would really be a very rewarding experience for any individual.
Great. But we have to remember, this is a recorded interview, and it's April 22nd, 2014. What we'll do is we'll put it up online, and people can listen to it, and we'll also have a link to your website. Is there any other contact info you'd like to give?
Just the general chapter website as well, and nmss.org. Or National Multiple Sclerosis Society.org. Either one will take you first to our national website, and then from there you can easily link right to the Maryland chapter.
That sounds great. And lastly, I'd just like to ask you, what do you like playing on the piano?
So I would say that probably I like playing jazz.
All right.
But I'm not as good at jazz as I should be. I'm probably better at more of the rock pop type music, but I actually prefer jazz. It just is more fun to play on the piano. So
that sounds great. Well, thanks for joining us today. I've been talking to Mark Roeder, the chapter president of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. And you've been listening to me, Dave Custy, the host of Healthcare and Its Future on Baltimore Internet Radio.